Good evening. Good evening. Thank you. We said a few moments ago, Brother Wilson said about our congregation, what a vital place it is playing in our lives.
What a vital place the congregation plays in our lives. And it is often said that we have a great congregation, which is true. In fact, I think it's always been true. Have we reached our full potential? No, not in this lifetime. But we are a great church family. We have much to enjoy and much to take advantage of. And when we're no longer in position to enjoy that in the public assembly, you know, what makes a great congregation is not just those who happen to be assembled in the building, but there are a number of great people that are viewing us through live stream right now in our own church family who have been responsible for helping build this congregation and would give anything to be here. This afternoon I had the privilege of visiting with David and Sherry Thomas. They are two of many who would love to be here with you and enjoying the service, but they have not missed a service through all the pandemic and various illnesses because of our live stream, and that has proven to be a great blessing. So yes, vital to our lives, but also a great church family, and we're grateful for both those that can assemble and those who are viewing our services and participating to the very best that they can, and even some like our sister Phyllis, who is not able to be here this morning but is here tonight. We're always grateful for these multiple opportunities to worship. Some years ago, I was holding a meeting in Columbus, Georgia, and as I've said before, wherever you go in opportunities like that, you're going to meet and be with the best people of any particular community or any particular town. One evening, I could not help but notice it was sprinkling just a little bit as the crowd was assembling. There was an older gentleman who was struggling with his wife's help. She pulled up to the side entrance of the foyer, like in our old auditorium. She pulled up to that side, what would have been the side door. She came around and opened the door. She helped him get out, and with his stick, he took a couple of steps, and then there were some brothers who were ready to help him up the remaining steps to the level of the auditorium. I was already in the aisle greeting people that evening, and when I saw all of that and watched how much care his wife was giving him, I stopped him. His name was Ben, her name was Faye, and I said, "Brother Ben, that was really a lot of great loving help that Sister Faye was giving you, getting the services. In fact, I've noticed y'all have not missed a service, and I appreciate that very much, but that's not what it was about. It was about coming to worship and study about the Lord, but it was good to be encouraged, you know, by their presence, even though they were struggling." And I said, "Tell me, how long have y'all been married?" And he stood a little bit more straight, and he said, 63 years. And I said, "Wow." When I meet a couple like that — I was much younger at the time — when I meet a couple like that, I like to tell their secret, go back to school, and in my classes, tell the secret to the longevity of their marriage. So do you and Faye have a secret? He stood up just a little bit more straight, or straighter. He said, "If they were to die today, I would die tomorrow." And by this time, Faye had caught up, and she was at his left side, holding on to his elbow, making sure that he didn't stumble. I said, "Sir, that is about the sweetest thing that I have ever heard from a married couple about their mate, their spouse." And Faye was touched by what a sweet thing that he said, and had her head down like that a little bit. And then, as we men so often do, he went and blew it by adding this. I mean, if they were to die today, who would take me to the doctor? And by the way, he got a good elbow in the side from Sister Faye. Okay, we're talking tonight about this generation that this text from Jeremiah, not really original with me, the title, you just read passages like this, and there are others that talk about the righteous in the eyes of God. Imagine that God has made arrangements for it to be possible for us to be considered righteous in His sight, even though we know what sinners that we are and forgiven by His grace and mercy and our obedience to the gospel of Christ. But still, notice that line, that the righteous, being like a tree planted by the water, does not cease to bear fruit. He's not talking about trees literally. He's using that as an image. He's pleading with his native land of Israel, of Judah in particular, to return to righteousness. And the blessings of God, the return from God that there will be for the entire nation as well as for individuals. I mean, they're facing the Babylonian captivity here. And he's trying to do whatever is possible over the course of his entire prophetic life to prepare them to return to God rather than being taken off in 70 years of captivity. The strength of the church depends upon every generation. Jared did an excellent job in talking about our youth. And you see, like this last week, what a difference it made when they were gone and those of you who went with them. It makes a tremendous difference while you're gone and a tremendous difference when you're back. And then Matt talked about university students last week. Bill, before that, talked about those who are in midstream of life. And so I've been given the choice or opportunity to speak about our senior saints. The church depends upon our senior saints just as it depends upon our youth, just as it depends upon our young adults, just as much as it depends on those in midlife and even early senior saints. It takes all of us to make a church. And isn't that one of the wonderful features about it? That everyone is important, everyone is urgent, everyone is vital. And if you want to go someplace on a regular basis where you are considered to be of vital importance, I mean, just ask your shepherd that leads your shepherding group. You never leave their thoughts, really. You never leave their prayers. And that's a lot of people per group. And so as we think tonight, I want us to think first of all about God's use of seniors both then and now. You're familiar with each of these examples of those in the Bible story who proved to be called into rather unique service at an older age. And you might say, well, the lifespan was older then. We know that Moses lived to be 120 before God took him, conducted his funeral service, and buried him in the valley of Mount Sinai, where we really do not know exactly where that tomb is. Not important that we know. But anyway, Aaron was 83. Moses was 80. When Moses was called to lead the children of Israel out of Egyptian captivity, and by using one of his excuses that I am not eloquent, I'm not a speaker, even though he had been raised in the palace of Pharaoh 40 years and then been a shepherd 40 years, I mean, he'd learned a lot, surely, about speech, and he'd learned a lot about knowledge and wisdom in the palace, but he certainly learned a lot about life being a shepherd, you know, leadership skills and things like that, defense abilities and so forth. Not an excuse when God calls you. And so he gave him Aaron, his older brother, 83 years old. And yes, the lifespan was longer then, but still, think about those 30, 40-year periods, increments in Moses' life. In Pharaoh's palace, in the land of Midian as a shepherd, to his father-in-law, and then the 40 years of leading the children of Israel out of Egypt, the Exodus, and then the wilderness wandering, which had to be a test of anybody's mettle, let me tell you. So that's one example that we can read about in Exodus 7, verse 7, and really the entire four books of Exodus to Deuteronomy. Joshua and Caleb were part of that team. They were the two spies, you know, that went into the land of Canaan and said, we can do this because the Lord is on our side. It's not about us, it's about the Lord. We can take this land, while the other 10 spies said, no, 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 we're like grasshoppers before them. They'll crush us. We have no hope. Well, they had no faith is the reason they had no hope. But Joshua and Caleb were 80 or so when they were called. Joshua lived to be 110, and we're not given the specifics on Caleb's age. But they rose to the occasion and led the conquest of Canaan against unbelievable odds because the Lord was with them. And nothing could defeat them but their own disobedience and lack of faith. Daniel, we meet as a 17-year-old in chapter 1, but all of his life has lived after that 17 year in both Babylonian and Persian empire. He won the favor of whatever king was in control of Nebuchadnezzar, of Belshazzar, of Cyrus, of Darius, all of those people that he served under. He was made one of the three governors over all of the province of Babylon. And he was a Jew. He was not a Babylonian. And so he lived to be up in his 70s, perhaps 80, in that particular role. Zacharias and Elizabeth, one reason that Elizabeth can't help but laugh when, like Sarah did, when an angel of the Lord informs Zacharias, that he and Elizabeth are going to be blessed with a little boy, and they've never been able to have a child before. She's been barren throughout their married life. And they were at an advanced age, we're not told the exact year, but long beyond, far beyond childbearing years. And God called them to give birth and teaching and preparation, leadership and encouragement to John the Baptizer, who paved the way for the Lord and played a significant part in changing the world forever in doing that. Simeon and Anna were... Simeon was a priest, and Anna had a role in the temple as well. Anna was at least 84 when the Lord is brought to the temple for the purpose of circumcision, the eighth day after birth. And they are there and recognize the one that they had been waiting and hoping to see come into the world. And sure enough, they got to see the baby Jesus, and it was like now we can die, now that we have seen the Lord, now that we can have seen the Son of God. And their testimony about that, which is given to us only by Luke, is a great testimony of faith and, again, evidence and proof that God has a place where age is not a factor. Paul refers to himself in the one chapter book of Philemon in verse 9 as Paul the Aged. He makes his appeal to Philemon about the runaway slave Onesimus. And part of his appeal is, he said, you know, I could appeal to you to do what is right on the basis of me being an apostle. But I'm going to appeal to you on the basis of me being aged, of being someone who is your servant. And I want you to take this servant back and treat him as though he is a brother, because while he's been with me, that's what he has become. He has become a brother in the Lord. Paul, perhaps, was the original one that had a really successful prison ministry, let me tell you. And then there's John the Elder, which we know as John, the one that Jesus loved, the Apostle John, who perhaps at 90 and beyond, the decade of his 90s, wrote his five books of inspiration, the Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, and then for sure the book of Revelation. Look at how God has used people that the world would call ordinary, and yet here we are tonight on June 13th of 2021 talking about them and talking about their place, their importance, their contribution to the Lord's work in the time that God gave them. And so we ought to be encouraged by that. We talk about retirement in real life, and we've worked long and hard to get there, but there is no retirement, of course, from the Lord's work. We do not want to cruise into heaven, do we? We want to be active, or as some of the old preachers used to say, I'm going to die with my boots on. Well, that just didn't apply to cowboys. That applied to people who intended to go to the very last minute, doing what they did, and that was sharing the gospel with people. Now, God's use of seniors now. Number one, there are a lot of illustrations that could be made of this, but number one, there will always be the need, the urgent need, for those men in a congregation who are qualified, according to 1 Timothy 3, Titus chapter 1, 5-9, and then Peter adds some personal qualities, being an elder himself. That's where we find out that not only was he an apostle, but like John, he was an elder as well. And so he talks about the kind of qualities that are needed in a man who is going to serve in that role. Acts 14, verse 23, just to show you how important the role of elder is and the role of eldership, is that on the first missionary journey, as Paul and Barnabas had established all these congregations in their first tour, when they came back to Antioch of Syria, their sponsoring congregation, when they came back after about a year of being out on the road establishing these churches, they stopped at every one of those locations and with their divine authority appointed elders, notice this, in every congregation. Now we have places today where that is not the case. And it's not necessarily because people are trying to be disobedient or they do not know, you know, what to do about appointing elders, but really there are not men who either desire the work or are qualified to do the work. And let me mention about this, you cannot talk about these roles without talking about godly wives as well. I do not believe that an elder who has served for a long time and has had a faithful companion that he just automatically has to step down. Some do that. I don't believe that that's what the Bible intends to teach, but that's some interpretation. But you cannot do the work. Husband of one wife, yes, but that wife must be godly. And we are blessed with that combination here and throughout the brotherhood. So there will always be the need for elders. Okay, we have 13 current elders. Could we have more? Yes. Some of you have served, that have moved here, have served in other congregations. And you've been through all of the sleepless nights and all the days of anxiety about various problems, difficulties. As soon as one is solved, there is another that pops up. And it's really often a thankless job, but it's a non-ending job. But let me tell you, I tell you who's taking really good attention, making good attention about this, the Lord Himself. And so we commend those who take on the burden, if you will, of leadership, of accountability, of responsibility that is 24/7. There is always going to be the need for that. So I say to our younger men, who may right now be in the role of deacon, to be preparing for such a role because you do not know when the Lord's call may come. I'm not talking about anything supernatural, but I'm talking about the need, the opportunity, and maybe all of us that are here now may not be in Henderson in the years to come. We may be in places where one man plus one other man will make up an eldership, and so there needs to be prayerful preparation whether we wind up serving in that role or not. There will always be the need for the most beautiful women in the world. Not those who are thought to be so by the world because their beauty is fading day by day, but older women who take up what Paul says in Titus 2, verses 3-5, the older women are to teach the younger women. What are some of the things that they're supposed to teach?
How to love your husband. Does the world need that message? Does the church need that message? Absolutely. How to love your children. Does the world need that message with all the abuse that we have going on in the world? Does the church need that encouragement to bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord? Absolutely. So there's always going to be the need to be hospitable, and all of that goes into this particular role. We have a need for our older ladies, and we salute. All of us are getting older day by day, but we salute those who are already there, who are not resting on their laurels. I wish you could have been at the Oasis luncheon the other day just to see the great number of older ladies, older men in the congregation, loving getting back together for the first time, and there was a feast. But the feast really was spiritual in nature rather than purely natural, and we're grateful for all of you who contribute. There will always be a need for service that our senior saints can provide. One reason that I loved the congregation where I grew up is because there was no question that our family was going to be there. I mean, that decision was made long before I came along. But at a very young age, I realized, oh, I love these people. I love these older people. I love these people where, say, the men, if I ever sat towards the back, which was not much, but I could see all kinds of wrinkle patterns on the back of their neck. But they were always there. And the white hair. And the slower step. But the word of encouragement. You know what that was saying? What that was translating to a kid? Example. Example. Model. And not model in terms of imitation. Not the real thing. But the real thing. They were there. They were the rock of the congregation. They and their wives. They've been teaching classes all through those years. They've been supporting the preachers that came and go. They were keeping the New Testament order of things as we restored New Testament Christianity. They were making sure, and they were making sure that as the building needed enhancements and expansion and grew and grew and grew, and the idea was there were those people stepping up and stepping out to lead. We'll always need the example of patience and perseverance and faithfulness. We'll always need wisdom. You know, there's a kid that could be described as a wise guy, but that doesn't mean he's a wise kid. Wisdom comes from living, and it comes from the knowledge of living, and it comes from the experience of living. And when you combine knowledge and age and experience, you come up with wisdom. Someone said a number of years ago that the very best counselors in the world are grandmothers. Have they been to a class? No. Well, how is it they know so much about life? They have lived it. They have experienced it. And so their grandchildren, as well as their children, and others that will listen, need to listen. When I have sought advice on a personal level, I have gone to someone in the church, usually an elder, and talked about life-changing decisions. Why did I do that? Because of the trust that I had in them and the confidence that I had in them. That is not to be taken lightly. Let me tell you, it comes from living and from experiencing and from working hard in behalf of the Lord, and all the lessons that are learned in the process. Teaching what the will of God is in all circumstances. Let me ask you, does the Lord's will change in the matter of telling the truth and being honest? Does the Lord's will change when it comes to sexual faithfulness or unfaithfulness outside of marriage? Has it changed? Does the Lord will change in terms of regard for human life, even and especially life that is in the womb? Has his will changed? No. Will it ever be right to steal? No. Will it ever be right to bear false witness? Will it ever be right to covet? No. Those laws, those principles are set in stone, intended to be set in hearts. And if the world were following them, we would not have the issues that we have in the world. Hospitality, benevolence in behalf of the younger. You know, those of us who are older hopefully are in a position where we are in a better position financially than we could have ever dreamed when we married or when we were bringing little ones in the world and there was way too much month at the end of the money. Some of you are there right now. And so it's an opportunity for those who are older to take the younger into their homes or into their circle of looking out for and encouraging. There will always be the great need for that. And then in what the Jerusalem church did, the edification or the building up of the saints, the evangelism of the lost, and then the benevolence toward both, or encouragement toward both, there's always going to be the need for that. And see, when you spend time listening to older people, when you take the time to visit, or to call, or even to text, you learn if you listen. And you're going to have wisdom that you can pass on, even at an early age, you can pass on to others that may need that at just an opportune time. You never know. You know, one reason why that we need to commit as much scripture to memory, to heart, as we can, we never know when we're going to need the power and the strength of that verse to keep us in the straight and narrow rather than the broad way. Those folks who have been there all through life, not saying they're not older folks who can be added to the church in older life. Roy and I baptized a gentleman some years ago, 86 years old, who lived 11 more days. Is there hope for such a case? Well, absolutely, or we don't believe what the gospel says. And so whether our time is short or long, we have plenty of opportunities to encourage. Robert McQuilkin is a writer who said, God planned the strength and beauty of youth to be physical, and the strength and beauty of age to be spiritual. We gradually lose the strength and beauty that is temporary, so we'll be sure to concentrate on the strength and beauty which is forever. We may not look like we looked at one time. We certainly cannot run like we ran at one time. We cannot jump or do backflips, forget that one, that you know, we may have done at one time. But is there an inward beauty that Paul describes in 2 Corinthians 4:16 when he says, even though our bodies are decaying, and I'm telling you, you can be with people where it just seems exactly the case, they're decaying day by day, our inward man, our inward woman is being renewed, being strengthened day by day. That's why it's great to hear an older person, and we especially appreciate the lesson that Wayne delivered this morning. That's why it's great to hear an older person talk about heaven, pray about heaven in your presence, and sing about heaven. They know where they are in life, and they look forward to it. They look forward to it. We close tonight with this passage. The righteous flourish like the palm tree, and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Planted in the house of the Lord, flourish in the courts of God, they still bear fruit in old age. They are ever full of sap and green to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. So I appeal to our senior saints not to feel like that your life is over and not to feel like that your service to God is over. You're entering a whole new area. One of the cards that I received upon approaching retirement from FHU said this, you have done this, and you have done this, and you have done this, you know, just a printed card. But on the inside, the print continues saying, now you are ready for the best part of your life. And that indeed could be the case for the faithful child of God. We have opportunities for us that perhaps we didn't have earlier, but now we do. One opportunity we all have is to respond to the Lord's invitation as we sing, Love Lifted Me. When you respond to the Lord, it's because you love him, not because you're afraid of him, but you love him. And I appeal to you, someone young or old, older, is ready to obey the gospel by being baptized into Christ, that you'll take advantage of this opportunity. You know that you are lost outside of the Lord, outside of the church, that you can be saved and are saved in the church, because the church, according to Paul in Ephesians, is made up of the saved by the grace of God and the blood of Jesus and our obedience. So if that's your need or need for prayers for any other reason, we stand to encourage you while we sing.